following is a production of DallasCowboys.com and the Dallas Cowboys Football Club.
How about them Cowboys?
Yes! Go Cowboys!
This is the DallasCowboys.com Draft Show. Your war room for insider news and draft analysis from deep within the confines of Cowboys headquarters at the Star in Frisco.
Today is Tuesday, April 16th, 2024, and we are officially single digits. 9 days away from the NFL draft in Detroit, Michigan, coming up next Thursday as we welcome you into the draft show presented by Miller Lite. Taste you can depend on. Oh, yeah, we're ready to roll. It's time to get things going. 9 days away, Aisha Morrison, Brian Broaddus, Nick Harris, Bobby Belt, Jasmine Marshall running everything in the back. I'm Kyle Yeomans. It is here. It's crazy that we're getting there. And I feel like we say this at the start of every episode, but it's crazy how quickly it's come up upon it. But are the boards set at this point, Brian?
No.
You're still shifting.
Still shifting it
around.
You're working on some final. What'll happen is this week will be where they'll get it organized. And then next week they could start doing the mock drafts or making their calls and all that. So, yeah, we've still got some discussions that'll be made. You know, there'll be some position groups. There'll be some groups that are a bit lighter than others, and they'll be able to get through those a little bit quicker. But you want to try and do this. I mean, the final push, you want to make sure you're as fresh as possible. You know, it's a little bit of a daunting task to put that thing together, as we're all learning. But they've got this week, and then next week will be about trying to make sure they got everything lined up on the board with their medicals. Any trade possibilities, alert teams, what they're interested in, and then kind of navigate that and get ready for Thursday.
It's crazy how quickly it hasn't been quick because these guys have been doing it for 360 days and then watching these prospects as juniors and sophomores and freshmen. But now it's coming down to the wire and we're getting really close. But they've got some tough decisions to make. And we have some tough decisions on the docket as well. Brian, you have some would-you-rathers. I want to get into this.
Yeah.
So we have time for Twitter on the 20. Would you rather this prospect or that prospect, who you want to start it off with?
Yeah, let me start it off here by I had all these. You did a great job of getting all these on our phone. And I was
gonna, you want me to give you the first two?
Go ahead and give me the first two. So wait, hang on. I got it right here.
Got it.
How
go
about
for
that?
It. Get
there
after
we go.
It.
All right. And I'll start with you on this one, Nick. Would you rather have Caden? This is an offensive line comparison, a couple of tackles.
Let's do it.
Caden Wallace from Penn State or Christian Jones, tackle from Texas?
Yeah, I really like this one because both of these guys have a ton of experience at right tackle. I think both of them over 40 games. I like Caden Wallace a little bit more. I have him in the fourth. I think he's a little bit more athletic. I think he's got positional versatility that you can kind of slide him inside if you wanted to at the next level. Whereas Christian Jones, I think he's a true right tackle, and he's more of a you know what you're getting when you get him. I think Wallace, there's still something to unlock there. So I'm taking Wallace. But I think Jones could bring a lot of experience to an offensive line room for sure.
Robert. Caden Wallace or Christian Jones?
I mean, I really like Caden Wallace. I think I'm higher on Caden Wallace than probably most other people are because I got Caden Wallace in the third round.
Wow.
But to me, like, it's not flashy with Caden Wallace. It's not like you see a whole bunch of, like, wow moments or, oh, my gosh, he's just mauling this guy or, you know, you're having those sorts of moments with him. But he's so clean technically. I think he's... Honestly, if you're just talking about next year, who's more pro-ready to step in and take NFL snaps last year, Caden Wallace might be more ready than Olu Fashanu on the other side. Because, to me, I think Caden Wallace is ready to step in and, you know, contribute and not get overwhelmed technically. Like, there's still some stuff with Fashanu that you're working out. But I think that Wallace is just, he's steady across the board. You don't see him all in. He always competes. He's always generally winning his block. I don't see him ending up on the ground a lot. I don't see him losing very frequently. Christian Jones is a mauler. Like, he plays with a ton of power, and it looks really impressive at times. But I look at him, and I think that's somebody who has sincere athletic limitations and is somebody who I don't think his hands and his feet are always working in harmony the way that I see it more frequently with Caden Wallace. So I take Caden Wallace pretty easily.
Yeah.
Kyle, you got some there?
Yeah, I think when you're looking at Christian Jones specifically, you mentioned the strength. He's got pro-ready strength, but his footwork is not there. There's a lot of cleaning up you're going to have to do whenever it comes to his footwork, hand placement. He gets in trouble, but he gets out of it with how strong he is. He reminds me of some of these unpolished guys that you can maybe develop into a high-level depth piece at the offensive line position. He's not going to be ready to start immediately. Going back to exactly what Nick and Bobby just said, I think Wallace could start now. I think he could. Maybe not be a high-level guy, but like a T.J. Bass and a Brock Hoffman, where you can service him into certain starting roles and get some significant snaps in a pinch. I think that's where he could work into it, just because I think he is more pro-ready and he's cleaner with his footwork across the board.
Aisha.
Yeah, I would be going with Caden Wallace in this situation. I mean, Nick brought up just the fact that it's the consistency for me, is that when you watch the tape, it's not – with Christian Jones, there were times, like, I love how he fires off the ball. I like how he's able to get to the second level. But Bobby made a fantastic point saying that it's not always in harmony. And with Caden Wallace, I think you see that more consistently in what they were able – what they were able to do there in Penn State.
Yeah, I wonder if people really look at Christian Jones maybe as a guard. You know, maybe that he might be a little bit better prospect there with not having to deal with all the stuff on the outside. But
because the feet?
Yeah, the feet.
Okay.
The thing about it is I got both of them. They both a lot of games. You know, I mean, Christian Jones has made 48 starts for Texas.
Goodness.
I mean, that's pretty impressive when you start to talk about. But you're right. Everybody's right here. Where he will struggle is with the athletic opponent. But I had both those guys in the fourth round. That's why I had them right there. I'm just trying to kind of get an idea where you guys thought. Bobby. Mekhi Wingo, defensive tackle, Texas A&M. Dwayne Carter, defensive tackle from Duke.
Mekhi Wingo
from LSU? Your LSU Tigers?
LSU, yeah.
What'd I say?
Texas A&M.
You're thinking McKinley Jackson.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant LSU.
Another great player.
My bad. I was worried about the thing with the Duke.
You clicked on the other one.
Yeah, Wingo LSU. I'm sorry about that. Wingo LSU. I was thinking Texas A&M for some stupid reason. And then Dwayne Carter from Duke.
I have them, like, I mean, I haven't gotten that deep into my entire stack yet to where they would be in there, but on the defensive tackle rankings that I have, they're right next to each other. And so I think they're very similar. I'm a little hesitant because I think the size issues with Wingo do show up at times where you can see that length gives him a problem. And that's not as much of an issue with Dwayne Carter. They're both similar to me in that they're both like hot motor guys and big effort guys. To me, I think that Wingo's get off is just a little bit better. Like his snap anticipation's a little bit better. And I think he's better at using his hands and getting off of blocks. And so for me, it'd be Wingo. I don't love either one of them outside of like round five. That's where I have both of them. But wow. Wingo to me just slightly over Carter.
I think I'm a little higher on Carter than most people. I have a late third round grade on him. I don't know where you guys have him. I think he's a top 100 player or borderline top 100 player. I love his play strength. I love his ability to find the football, always looking to force a turnover. He finished fourth in Duke program history in forced fumbles. And we're talking about an interior defensive lineman. We're not talking about an edge rusher that's coming off the edge and hitting it from behind and getting to the blind side of a quarterback. You're talking about a guy that just knows how to get to the football and know how to make a play. He was 11th in sacks in program history too. He's limited from an athletic standpoint, and I agree with you. I think Wingo has better explosion at the line of scrimmage, but I think everything else, I think Dwayne Carter does better. I have Wingo in the fifth. I have Dwayne Carter in the third, and I think he could be a legitimate player and an anchor moving forward.
Yeah, the jump for me for Carter over Wingo as well is Wingo, I think, durability concerns after the injury last year, but also you look at his size as well. That was something that Bobby mentioned, but I have Dwayne Carter, high fourth, Mekhi Wingo, probably in that fourth, fifth range. I would probably kind of see him as a fifth guy, but yeah, Dwayne Carter, a.k.a. Wheezy F, baby, and the F is for fourth round pick.
Please. Please.
Aisha.
For me, Bobby brought up the fact that the size, the difference to me is the motor with both of them. Is I think that Dwayne Carter has a tiny bit more of a motor in that situation. And as far as the size goes, like I think it shows up with Wingo when you start seeing him later in games and him rushing just down the middle of guys and stuff. So, Dwayne Carter would be my pick there. And I'm in the same spot as you. A third is crazy. But you know what? I'm not going
to
go.
It's a late third.
No, okay.
He's on my stack. He is number 97.
I don't hate it either, but I'm not, again, like, to your point, people are mixed on Dwayne Carter. Yeah. You might hear some people say, like, yeah, I'm really high on him, but it's also indicative of what this DT class is as well.
It is true. It's not a very spread out class, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's more so top heavy than anything, and you're going to get some of these guys early. Look at McKinley Jackson. I know you misspokenly said Texas A&M. Yep. He may be the third or fourth best nose tackle, true one technique in the entire draft class, and he's probably not going to go until the fourth round.
Yeah.
Like, that's just kind of how this defensive tackle class stacks out.
Mm-hmm. A couple of more notes on these guys. Dwayne Carter, three-time captain at Duke, which is a big, big-time deal, especially playing for Coach Mike Elko. He brought a high standard back to the Blue Devils. Not that they didn't already have it, but he was a big-time leader for them off the field and on the field. But also, looking at Mekhi Wingo, man, that second season that he had at LSU, which I'm sure you could speak to a little bit more, Brian, but if you can get that on a consistent basis at the NFL level, you got a value pick there on day three. I don't think that version comes back completely.
Yeah, the thing that I worry about with Wingo, and Aisha hit it on the nail on the head there, if he rushes down the middle, he's dead. He's got to play on the edge. He's got to be on the outside shoulders to take advantage of his quickness. I think there's a little stiffness to his game too. So, and the balance might be a little bit off too. The hands are really, really good, I feel like, but anything else, the strength, the power, I think with Carter, you got a little bit of a stronger guy and a little bit better motor there. Okay, Aisha, linebacker Cedric Gray from North Carolina or Tyron Hopper from linebacker from Missouri?
If I'm not mistaken, Cedric Gray is a little undersized, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
6'1", 234.
And if I'm not, I think he's, is he a Will?
He should be
a Will.
Yeah, he should be a
Will. Okay, because I have to put that in perspective because that means something to me. I think both these guys, like I mentioned, both of them have some size differences or whatever the case may be. I would be going with Cedric Gray, linebacker out of North Carolina. And again, I think Tyron Hopper has a lot of upside. I understand, like, he is smaller, and you can see that in the run game at times. But there is some explosiveness there that's intriguing. But as far as Cedric Gray goes, I think he just would have a little bit more versatility if he was able to put on some size. A little bit more size and move around and play every linebacker position. I think he can.
How about you there?
This one's tough for me. I have Cedric Gray above Hopper, but not by a lot. I have one guy sandwiched in between those two. The reason I have Gray higher is because with Hopper, you're missing instincts at times and you're missing angles, and it almost just looks like he's freelancing at times, and his speed and his physicality can help you get away with it. Mm-hmm. Whereas Gray, you're missing the physicality, but you have the instincts and you have the angles and you have the readability and the vision to be able to get to the ball and make plays. I mean, we're watching highlights of him on the video side of things, and it seems like he's one of those guys for that North Carolina defense that's always in the mix.
Yeah.
So I think I have Gray higher, both of them undersized. I think they're both Wills. I think they're both legitimate pros, but I would put Gray just a bit higher than Hopper and not by much.
I said Gray as a PA announcer's a best friend just because he says his name all the time. He's always in on the action. But I
tackled number 33, Cedric Gray.
Exactly. Fumble recovery right there. But I think if you're talking from a Cowboys perspective, I don't think either of these guys really make sense. The Tyron Hopper love is interesting because they had a formal with him. He was a 30 visit as well. But how do you justify bringing in a guy that's more accustomed to playing in coverage when you need a bigger linebacker to come and fill the run? You need guys to come in and fill running lanes. And I just don't think Hopper is that. I think both of these guys, they work better across the middle of the field. And, I think Gray does have some knacks in being able to attack the backfield and identify things going on back there. And that's why I kind of give Gray the advantage. But I don't think either of these guys really make sense for the Cowboys.
I have a question about Cedric Gray really quickly. Do y'all not like how he tackles? That's been a topic of discussion. Is just the way that he's not always like he's not a thumper by any means or whatever the case may be. And even when he does wrap up, sometimes it's like it's not forceful in a way that you would like to see from
a problem with how he finishes or like his
how he
form.
Finishes. How he well, I would say his form.
I mean, the finishing is like a function of, I think, like sometimes the lack of play strength, like when you see him having trouble getting off blocks and stuff like that.
Okay.
The form, nothing stood out to me as bad form with Cedric Gray. But, I mean, physicality is definitely, like the strength can give him issues. But you remember, like, Brian, that was something that we said consistently it showed up whenever we talked about Leighton Vander Esch when he was coming out.
Yeah.
Does he come off blocks? Is he physical enough? And he ultimately showed, like, he could do it, and it was something that he was really good at. And so, to me, I think Gray's a much better player than Hopper. I think Hopper, like, you're taking off traits and you're trying to project out and you're grabbing sort of a lottery ticket at linebacker. Cedric Gray, I think, could come in and, like, play snaps now at the NFL level. Hopper's going to take some time, and there's a lot bigger projection there. So in terms of who I feel safe as a baseline, like who they are as an NFL player, it's Cedric Gray, and it's not really close for me.
I kind of felt like that Hopper was a little bit better of a cover guy than he was. And I think the biggest difference is what you guys were talking about, his ability. He doesn't get off the blocks as well as Gray does. And so, you know, but he's got kind of a nose for the football, Hopper, when it comes to getting, like, knifing through, seeing a gap and knife through and then make a tackle on the behind the line of scrimmage. You know, I mean, the energy, the effort, I think he's smooth. I think he's fluid. You know, that's, I mean, I think one's got a little bit more strength than the other. And that's why I have Gray over Hopper myself. But I kind of felt like they were both pretty similar in what maybe that, you know, and Dallas looking at them the way they have. They're hunting linebackers, obviously, so we got to look at all these guys. All right, Nick, how about this one for the last one? DJ James, cornerback Auburn, or Renardo Green, cornerback from Florida State?
Yeah, both of these guys more on the narrow side. And when you look at their athletic traits, they're pretty similar. I thought of all four of these would you rather when I was going through them last night. This is probably the most fun one I had going through it. But I'm gonna take the edge with Renardo Green. When you see him up against elite competition versus DJ James up against elite competition, there's a little bit of a gap there. I mean, go back and watch that first game of the season against Brian Thomas Jr. and Malik Nabers. And Renardo Green, he's getting up on him on the line. He's throwing his hands around.
Yeah.
And here's a play he has right here on I believe that's Malik Nabers. But I think with Renardo Green, you get a guy that can be a press man corner. You get a guy that can step back and play safety. I think he's one of the more fun corner or just defensive backs in this entire draft. I'm a big Renardo Green guy, one of my pet cats in this draft, so I'm taking him.
Oh man.
Yeah, I mean, Green, and I said it last night in the text, like Green and James, like they are tags touching for me. Like in my stack, they're next to each other. And I've got Green just a little bit ahead. And it's mainly to me because, like, I think you're talking about the size limitations, the kind of, like, slender build definitely, I think, shows up more with James on tape than it does with Green, where I think that James shows he has some trouble with some, you know, bigger-bodied receivers at times. I also think that it definitely shows up in run support more. Not that Renardo Green's, like, you know, a great run defender, but he's absolutely active and willing to get in there. Whereas I feel like with James at times, like, it's just he is going to be, you know, people are going to look to run to his side, and it's going to be a problem. But for me, I think that Green and James, they're both, as cover guys, I think both very similar in the way that they are in terms of with their clean footwork, the way that they really at times almost look like they're running the route for the receiver. Really good at mirroring, don't get thrown off very much by, you know, exotic releases and stuff like that. So I like both of them. I've got both of them firmly in the second round.
Yeah, I think you got a Renardo Green is a great value Quinyon Mitchell, whereas DJ James is like a great value Nate Wiggins.
That's funny.
Just because you look at that 175 pound build that James and Wiggins have, you attack them in the run game, you attack them with bigger weapons, but you look at Green and you maybe think twice about that. But
I think whenever you look at Green too, one thing that separates him over James for me is the ball skills. I don't think James has the ability to play it high at the catch point if you need to, but whenever it comes to ball skills, Green was far and away a better player whenever it came to attacking the football. Add that to the physicality and the willingness to stop the run, that's why I have him just a tiny bit ahead.
Oddly enough, I thought that DJ James in times, even just a little bit more than Renardo Green, was willing to come in and help out in the run game. Both of these guys, very scrappy. One thing about Renardo Green, you brought it up. Yo, the way he jams and he likes to get his hands on people at the line of scrimmage, he's just not afraid. And I do think that there's a lot of value to that in this league, is a guy that you see can play press man at a consistent rate, especially with all of the things that are being done to get these receivers open. He's going to reroute guys. he's going to get in their face. I think Renardo Green is going to be a hell of a player. So, yeah, I would definitely go with him in that scenario. But DJ James isn't, to me, to your point, he's not that far behind. And he is better in press than I think he is in zone.
Why did I think that Green was 50-50 on getting penalties?
Yeah, you're going to get penalties.
He's scrapped. Yeah, he's going to draw some plays.
Little handsy.
There are going to be games where it's going to, like, if he's on your team, you're like, boy, he got away with one there. Oh, wait, they got him on that one. You guys have nailed these.
He needs more control.
Yeah, Green's a smart player. He knows how to use the sideline and push guys out of bounds and do stuff like that. But his toughness is impressive. The only question I had about him was the 50-50s.
Yeah.
That there's going to be 50% of the time where you're going to be so happy he's on your team, and there's going to be 50% of the time where you're pissed off at him because he got a holding call on third down that didn't get you off the field.
Yeah, he's too fast for his own good sometimes, I think.
Good players, though. Both of them are really good players.
Those were fun. Four good scenarios. Yeah, none of those were, I think, one or the other. They're all very tightly contested prospects. I will say, side note, as we're showing some of the highlights for Green here, favorite uniforms in the entire draft process for me were the Florida States with the white helmets with the
they wore this against Boston College.
They wore them against BC.
Yeah, I think
gosh, those were sweet. Yeah. All right, when we come back, we've got some Twitter on the 20. We've got your questions asking for the NFL draft 9 days away. When we come back with more of the Draft Show after this.
I'm Dak Prescott, quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys.
And they snap it to Prescott, who looks right. It's not there. He escapes left. He'll run for a first down.
Just like football, when it comes to crypto, it's important to have a team you can trust. With Blockchain.com, I know I'm in good hands. Since 2011, they've been trusted by millions around the world to buy, sell, and trade cryptocurrency.
Prescott's going to run this himself. Run it up the middle, and he scores.
Whether you're new to crypto or an active trader, they've got you covered. What are you waiting for? Get started at blockchain.com.
I'm Darren Woodson, former Dallas Cowboy player and Super Bowl champion. When I played in the NFL at a high level, I relied on my vision to see the field. As I started getting older, I noticed my vision wasn't as good, and I was getting frustrated from wearing my glasses all day. I went to Laser Care Eye Center, and Dr. G talked about all the options. Thanks to technology and Laser Care Eye Center, I can see near, far, and between. Don't fumble your vision any longer. Visit them at dfweyes.com and tell them Darren sent you. They got me back on my game.
In a stressful world, Lincoln provides balance and calm amidst the chaos by creating sanctuaries that move you through the world with ease. Our vehicles make your time richer and more uplifting with human-centric design, intelligent technology, and powerful performance. As the official luxury vehicle of the Dallas Cowboys, driving a Lincoln is just another way to show your team pride. Experience our full lineup of luxury vehicles, including the Corsair, Aviator, Navigator, and Nautilus. At Lincoln.com.
Hi, I'm Danny McCray, Dallas Cowboys alumni player here with Smoothie King. And Smoothie King wants to ask you, what's that sound? That's the sound of us magically transforming our smoothie bowls into two new decadent flavors. Dig into a cool acai or pitaya bowl, handcrafted with crunchy, purely Elizabeth granola, fresh strawberries, and finished with a velvety chocolate hazelnut drizzle. Perfect for breakfast, lunch, or anytime you want to munch. And that's the sound of you making them disappear. Smoothie bowls, now in two new decadent flavors. Only at Smoothie King, the official smoothie of the Dallas Cowboys.
This is the DallasCowboys.com Draft Show.
The Draft Show presented by Miller Lite, taste you can depend on. The 11th annual Reliant Home Run Derby is back at Riders Field in Frisco, May 1st at 6 p.m. Come see your favorite Dallas Cowboys players swing for the fences to raise money for the Salvation Army. Admission and parking are free. Visit DallasCowboys.com/ReliantHRD to learn more. We will see you there. My wife and I are actually emceeing that event, so that's going to be a whole lot of fun. Yeah, we got the triplet mom out there having some fun, and then I'll be hitting for Speedway Children's Charities in the Media Home Run Derby beforehand, so that'll be fun.
I forgot you know how to do that.
Every once in a while. All right, you know what else I know how to do? I know how to lead Jasmine Marshall in the back, who's been doing a great job with the B-roll, to hit the sounder for some...
Twitter on the 20.
She's on it.
Big time, Jazz. Big time. First one is from Gino. He says, what concern, if any, do the Cowboys have that the offensive tackles that they're targeting at 24 could have just one combined start at left tackle? And he outlines it for you. J.C. Latham, 0 left tackle starts, 27 at right. Taliesi Fuaga, 0 at left tackle, 25 at right tackle. Amarius Mims, 0 at left tackle, 8 at right tackle. And then Tyler Guyton, 1 left tackle start, 13 at right tackle.
That's why you're going to draft a center at 24.
Yeah, it's certainly a concern. It's certainly a concern. I think that's something you think about whenever you you look at this tackle class, because early in the draft cycle, we're talking about how deep it is and how there's going to be 8-9 going in the first round. But do you feel comfortable moving any of those guys to the left side from day one, and that being the expectation if you haven't seen it? And I think it's tough to project if you haven't seen it in person. For me, I feel like if the talent is there and the athleticism is there, then there is a lot of room to be able to move a guy to the left side. So when you look at that, you look at Fuaga. I don't think he's going to be a guy that is even there at 15, much less 24. You look at a guy like Tyler Guyton, maybe, that could move over to the left side, and you have a little bit of comfortability there. But I think that's more so where you look at that trade-back scenario, and you just grab a guy maybe later on that you know can be a true left tackle. And if you don't feel comfortable with that, you still have Tyler Smith in the building, and that is coming from team left guard Tyler Smith. So
yeah, that's my thing about it is, are any of these guys better than Tyler Smith right now at tackle?
I don't think you necessarily need that, though. You don't need someone to be better than Tyler Smith. You need someone to be better in the long term than what Tyler Smith would bring you. I think you want to put him at left guard. That is the desire.
I get that, but you got coaches that the Emojis coach is on a one-year deal situation right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that plays into the chances they're willing to take, or, you know, because you said this is more of like a what are they going to become, whatever the case may be. No, you know what Tyler is right now. So I think that conversation comes into play as well. That's why we had the conversation about maybe they take a guard instead.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think, but maybe they do instead if they think that Tyler's ready to take on that left tackle role. So
I think an order of belief, like what they think is realistic. Like if you were to ask me, or if you were to ask them, I think like if you were to take Tyler Smith at left tackle, TJ Bass at left guard, Brock Hoffman at center, where do they have the most uneasiness? I think they would feel the most uneasy about center going into next year with them.
Me too.
And I think if you play Tyler Smith at left guard, you're either banking on somebody playing left tackle for you on your roster currently, if you end up drafting a center, you're banking on somebody playing left tackle for you currently that probably is not considered an NFL starter right now.
Yeah.
And then if you're drafting somebody, like the question asks, you are at like very, there's a very big likelihood that you're asking somebody to flip sides and play a completely different position. And it, like, I mean, it's, that's not an easy flip for a lot of guys is that footwork. And so that's why to me, yeah, there is some uneasiness about the idea of, hey, you're projecting a lot here. Like even some of the centers we're talking about, we're projecting that the Jackson Powers Johnson medicals will be okay. You're projecting that Graham Barton is going to be able to pick up center, a position that he hasn't played in, you know, 4 years or whatever it is. So to me, I think that you're trying to minimize as much risk as possible. And so that is one of the reasons why I think that that's definitely deserves weight. I also think it's one of the reasons why we're talking about Kingsley Suamataia in the course of all this too, is because that's somebody who you've seen play both sides.
You have.
Yes. And do it effectively. And so for me, it is a question. It is a concern. And I think that if you end up drafting Mims, Guyton, whoever else, it'll be a talking point that we have is that, hey, how is this transition going? How's this flip going? Are you going to find that very famously within this own building in the last 4 years, it was said, Terrence Steele playing left tackle is not the same player as he is when he's playing right tackle. It's just, it's not been the same thing. So it's a projection for sure, but I mean, that's why you have this scouting staff here that you do and why you get the input from coaches like Mike Solari.
We're 9 days out, and I've had a few different gut feelings as this draft process has gone on, but Kingsley Suamataia is my gut feeling right now.
Oh, that's the trend. I think I'm there with you.
I totally agree. Yeah.
I actually sent an email yesterday that said gut feeling before I take my leave to Nick to Nick Eatman that said who the pick is going to be. If I had to choose right now as we stand, I think he's going to be.
But you guys are calling that on the trade back, or you're calling it at 24?
I'm thinking it's a trade back.
That 30.
Yeah. Now, we've seen this before, though. Tyler Smith was an early second-round grade, I think, on most of our boards, or maybe even a third on some people's boards. And he was taken at pick 24. I mean, or 23 at that year. But
it's 24.
Was it 24?
Yeah.
So, yeah, 24. So we've seen it before where they've taken guys because they know they're not going to get to the second-round selection. They know they're not going to make it that far. Could he necessarily be that? It's yet to be seen because we got to see how the board lies first. But does it play a factor in a scouting department like that, Brian, when you're watching the film and you're saying it's all projection on a lot of these guys up front?
That's what you're trying to figure out. The biggest question I want to ask this group is that if they can't trade back? Are we comfortable taking the BYU tackle if one of these centers is on the board?
You're talking JPJ or Graham Barton?
Yeah.
I'm taking Graham Barton.
I would take Graham Barton.
Okay, sure. Barton's gone.
Okay.
It's Powers Johnson or BYU tackle.
In the first?
At 24. You
can't trade back.
You can't trade back. Like, everybody here wants to try and trade back. And those phones, okay, everybody's calling. Say they're Buffalo's calling, San Francisco's calling, but they're not giving you value for your pick. And you're going to sit there and you're going to have to make a pick. Are you going to take that BYU tackle or are you going to take that center?
I think I'd be okay with it. I think okay I could with live what? With it, with taking Kingsley Suamataia.
Okay.
I think the reason being is you're addressing a need, and I don't want to window dress my board at all.
Sure.
Right? You don't want to. But you're in a pigeonholed situation at where you stand offensive line-wise where you need two guys that are NFL-ready mm-hmm. right now to come in and play. Whether that's Brock Hoffman and T.J. Bass on the interior, Tyler Smith at left tackle, you got to figure it out. You've got guys that are here. I think Suamataia is a high-floor guy. I know Brian loves that term.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a high-floor guy to where he can come in and be a significant contributor right now, and I think I'm okay with it.
I have a question for you guys. So at your first memory, who's a player that's flipped sides and been good as of late?
Well, Tyron Smith started off as a right tackle at USC and then moved to left tackle.
It's probably the best indication.
Yeah. Is this the best one that you guys can think of? Anybody as of late that you can think of that did that? I just think it's so much harder to do right now. Like, I mean...
What's so much harder to
flip sides? I think it's hard to flip sides.
A decade ago?
I think it's hard to flip sides in general, but I do think with the way that offenses are run now and how spread it is and how things like that, I think it's more difficult because pass pro, I mean, I'm not saying that teams don't run the ball. I'm just saying that pass pro is just like what I look at a whole bunch because most teams are trying to pass the ball. So I don't know. I just
I think things will be helpful though with having Tyler Smith inside.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some things if in fact that you have to flip a guy over, you know, that having that comfort of knowing that Tyler Smith can play inside and help you if you mess up too much.
Okay,
it helped Chuma Edoga a couple times.
Yeah, it sure did.
Didn't in Miami, but
see, that's the problem that I have. I don't know. I wish I knew that. That Awesome Richards could play left tackle.
Tater tots.
I wish I knew that. Because it would make my decision. But I'm sorry. I'm going to die on the hill of going to get in the center. Yeah. I'm just going to die on that hill.
Talking about JPJ or Kingsley.
Yes.
I think I'd go JPJ as well. I think if JPJ's off the board, though, and you have to pick there at 24, I'm going Kingsley.
Yeah. If your centers are all gone, I mean, with the exception, I mean, Frazier might be there and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you might have to be in a situation where – You might have to pick a tackle and a center on back-to-back picks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We keep earmarking that 56 for a running back or a linebacker. Heck, it might have to be a center.
Mm-hmm. Just really quickly, because the name that's popped in my head when we talk about flipping sides and who's done that transition, Kingsley Suamati's cousin did it. Because Penei Sewell was a left tackle at Oregon, and he flipped to right, and he's one of the best right tackles.
Thank you. That's what I was asking.
And so, I mean, that's
he's got somebody in the
in
the fam.
And obviously, flipping sides, I think, is different than pushing inside or bouncing outside for a lot of guys because the footwork's kind of reversed. But I mean, we see guys make those moves pretty consistently.
I want to try and sneak in a separate question. I had three different questions here around taking a 2025 draft pick, third or fourth round pick. And packaging it with the second round pick to move up into the top 40 to go get you a center or a guard if possible. Would you be interested in doing something like that? You're wagering future draft capital in order to make the move up, but is it enough to go and get you a center? If let's say you go offensive tackle in the first round, you take a Suamataia or you take a J.C. Latham or whoever it ends up being at 24, would you be okay wagering a third and a fourth or a fourth in next year's draft to go up and get a center?
If you could I'm gonna flip the tables on you here. If you let me do that, if you let me move one of next year's pick and that Fuaga gets anywhere near 15, I'm going.
Yeah, I just said that on the last show.
Would you take a first or a second to do that?
Well, depending, I mean, maybe you could do it for a third. You know, next year's you could do it for next year's three. Mm-hmm. is what you can do with what I mean, I could do the numbers. I mean, I'll pull the numbers up. But if you're going to give me the option to trade up, I'll go get the best tackle. I'll go get who go I think is it. The best tackle for me. Yeah.
If I'm in the war room and I believe that Fuaga can be the left tackle of the future, yeah. And if he gets there to 15, then I'm getting on the phone. I'm trying to package some picks from next year.
It would take a future two to get up to 15.
That'd be tough, but it depends how confident you feel about Fuaga. I feel pretty confident about Fuaga. I'd stand on the table for that, but I would also understand not wanting to. I think with expecting to get a lot of comp picks next year, you're expecting probably to have a top 20 pick next year as well. Mm-hmm. I think you make that gamble.
See, to me, the one player that I would go up for, I think, is him. I think in my book. Now, maybe they won't, but they're acting like they know something that we don't know, you know, with all the visits and stuff like that, all the work, all the legwork they've done on him. Yeah. That seems like a trade-up candidate for this football team. So I wonder if he got to a certain level. He gets past somebody. I mean, everybody kind of had him at the Jets.
Yeah, 10.
Say he somehow gets to 16, 17, someplace like in that thing, I think I'm getting on the phone and I think I'm giving up my two next year to do it or to try and do it.
I think what's tough with that too is that you look at that 16, 17, 18 range, you got a lot of teams that are hunting for an offensive tackle as well. Mm-hmm. Like Seattle, Cincinnati, Rams, Pittsburgh. I mean, all those teams right in there, you can make the case that they could go ahead and go grab a tackle. So you might even have to overpay, and you might have to do that second.
Just based off of that, I think you're going to have to do a second regardless. Yeah. But if he does fall to like 18 or 19, somehow he doesn't get through that mm-hmm. run, which I don't see it happening. You could get up to 18 with a future third. Just based off of the value of your pick, and you get a package of third.
So that's what I'm saying.
But it would take a lot for him to fall.
You know what? I hate to be this guy, but, you know, your quarterback's not signed. There's your compensatory three right there, you know, if you think about it. I mean, if he goes off and does something else, I don't want to be a wet blanket guy, but there's your three. But to me, he's the one guy that I would trade up for. And I don't think I would trade up in the second round for a center. But if I could go and get the best, though I think, on my board, and maybe their board too, maybe they feel like with all the work that they're doing on this guy, mm-hmm. it could be worth it to them. It could be worth it to say, we'll move the three and let's go. Let's do this. And then work around the second round, try and find. The thing I'm trying to do, and I'm not trying to slam the guy, I'm trying to upgrade from Biotish, okay? Mm-hmm. And maybe, I don't know how you guys feel, but the further down I get that board, I'm feeling like I'm getting Biotish, you know, with that.
I agree with you.
When I start to look at, you know, Limmer and or Penn State, I mean, maybe.
Hunter Norzad.
Yeah, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit better. But I'm feeling like if it's not one of the top three guys, now I'm down in the that other area. I feel like I'm kind of got the same center that I just gave up on.
I think you got a wider frame and a little bit more physical traits with Hunter Norzad. I'm a Norzad guy, so
sure.
That's a guy I stand on the table for. But I understand where you're coming from, because I thought about that same exact thing too. Because going into the offseason all year, talking about improving the run and stopping the run,
right.
And it's always been, well, it's not necessarily a running back conversation, so it's a center conversation.
Right.
And if you're going to improve that center, and that's one of your two biggest needs going into the offseason, then yeah, how much of an upgrade do you see fit there? And I don't know, even as highly as I think of Hunter Norzad, I don't know how much of an upgrade you would get in year one off of Tyler Biotish, if any. So it's a valid point.
See,
but it
also lends to the argument of going up and trying to get, I think you're trying to move up and around to get potentially Frazier. Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, that's probably who
if you're trying
think.
To go up in the 40s, you're probably looking at going to get Frazier is what you're trying to look at, right?
JPJ could probably slide into that range, and that's when you probably start getting on the phone like, hey, okay. Because there have been some mocks since the medicals have come out, since his draft visits have kind of gone on, that have seen him slide into those 40s and even early 50s I've seen him go.
There's a couple questions about JPJ specifically.
Yeah.
If he falls to 56, I know – all of us here are JPJ fans, but knowing the medicals, knowing the background, and knowing what the possibilities are there, if he falls all the way to you in the second round, are you hesitating to turn in the card, or are you running up there to turn
Who do you have card? More of a problem with it, him or Sweat?
A Sweat.
Because of the red flags?
Yeah.
Sweat.
Mm-hmm. Sweat, probably.
For sure, Sweat.
Man, you guys don't have a one technique.
We don't have a center either,
I mean,
Brian.
No.
I know you're right about that.
You should have a one technique.
Well, Mozzie, we'll see what. Okay, I'm sorry. My apologies. You have a one technique. We'll see what happens with the one technique.
Yeah, because to me, like, I mean, you can I feel like. This is the same conversation we had a couple weeks ago. To me, like, you have to. If you picked a guy in the first round 12 months ago and said, that's our one technique, and we're going to pick him over a premium position in the offensive line with limited capital, fine. You want to trade back, you want to pick up some extra capital and use it, that's fine. But to me, it's like they're legitimate, like, empty spots on this team right now that you need to fill with players. And to me, it's like that's – we're talking luxury at that point if you're talking to me about drafting defensive tackles instead of saying, hey, Osa's been really good at the three technique. Mozzie, we've evaluated him as like this. We need to trust the evaluation. We need to trust the coaches are going to get that out of him.
Mm. And Osa's going into his final year of his contract too, though.
Does Byron Murphy not do anything for you if he got to 24?
Man, that would be interesting. It really would. He's a three tech. You'd have to figure out how to get him on the field.
Yeah. He's a here native.
But,
good player. It's just he doesn't. It feels like an inefficient use of resources.
I agree.
Bobby is not playing.
A couple of these. I'm trying to do like multiple questions.
Bobby's inefficient right now.
Joe asked this question. Aisha, I want you to start first. Who is the one guy anywhere in the draft, anywhere, regardless of position, regardless of anything, that you would jump out of your seat with excitement, the fact that the Cowboys drafted him? Who would be, no matter what, who would be your favorite pick?
Right now, I'm trying to think. It doesn't matter who. It doesn't matter where.
Doesn't matter where. Doesn't matter who.
Tater Tots.
Best fit overall.
I don't know. I almost want to say that it's a safety that I really liked.
Wow.
Later on. My bad. Yeah, I think it's a safety that I liked later on that I was like, heck yeah. Oh, actually, no. I think I mentioned him the other day. Keith Rant Rudolph, DT from Illinois. Yeah. I feel like if you got – Bobby just mentioned, don't pick nobody up early. But even though he is a 3-tech/5-tech, I think he could come in and help out really well. I'm a lot more high on him than I think a lot of people are. Mm-hmm. I think if you even got him in the later rounds, that he could come in and contribute for your defensive line right away. He's one of my favorite watches from the interior position. It's been – this class is not – I don't know. It's not as interesting to me as last year's class. Mm-hmm. As far as DT goes, how did you guys feel about it, the DT class overall?
I agree. I was actually going through the Pick Fits article yesterday for defensive tackles and just trying to find where one text could fit in or where you would maybe bank on traits a little bit. Like, you could go bank on Evan Anderson late in day three. That's a 350, 360-pound guy you could bring in and have a big body. Actually put Keith Randolph in the sixth round in that one as the sixth-round potential pick fit. But there's not many one texts. You're not going to find many. I think you could find a couple on the undrafted pool, and you just kind of hope a big body is more athletic than you believe whenever he gets in the building, but
and then can we put a star by Eric All, the tight end out of Iowa?
I
throw there. I don't care, y'all. I understand he had a lot going on, but getting him in the later rounds, I feel like, could be valuable depending on what they think about John Stevens and his rehab right now, because there's a lot of similarities in the player to me.
What about you guys? What about jumping out of your seat with excitement?
If Troy Fatanu got down to them somehow at 24, I'd lose my mind. That's pretty exciting. Outside of that, I mean, if there was a way for them to get Jaden Hicks here, like, I'd absolutely love that. I think there is not enough of an emphasis on what they need in terms of diagnosing, reading and reacting, coverage responsibilities and everything else at the safety position. And to me, Jaden Hicks just fits a ton of it. And he is built like a classic safety. You see a lot of these safeties come in here where we talk about Bullard or other guys who it's like, man, they're thin or they don't check this box. Like, to me, Hicks is just like almost borders on like prototype of safety build. And I think he checks so many boxes for me. I'd love it if you could find a way to get him here.
I'll give you one for each day of the draft.
Oh, wow.
One, Fuaga, if that's a guy that's slipping and you jump up and grab him, man, I'd throw a party out on the lawn over there.
Would you run to the star and back?
No. on day two, Jonathan Brooks. I mean, I just think that's such a good fit for what's going on in this building and what he could potentially
You're
bring.
You're both not alone and completely alone in that at the same time. Yeah. I feel like if there's not a singular pick that would split this fan base more
For sure.
Than if Jonathan Brooks was the second round pick. It makes a ton of sense, and I think it'd be a hell of a lot of fun. But it's going to be 50-50 on people that are saying it's too high for a running back, and then people that are going to be excited that he's the pick.
Yeah, and then day three, I'm going to give you another running back, and it's Isaiah Davis out of South Dakota
State.
Yeah,
he can play.
I'm going to continue to hammer that name through. But yeah.
Like it. Brian, what do you think?
Man, you let me have Ricky Pearsall from Florida.
Oh, man.
Wide receiver. I'd be really happy about that. If you let me have Wallace, the linebacker from Kentucky, I might be on the island on that one. But
no,
man,
I'm with you.
That's your value.
That's my guy. If you just gave me if you gave me a shot at those two guys, if somehow they handed in that card and it said, you know, was it Tavian? What you say?
Trayvon Wallace.
Trayvon Wallace. Trayvon Wallace from Kentucky.
Do you reach and take him at 87? Knowing that you don't pick until 174.
Ooh.
He's the 57th best player on my board.
Okay, then yeah. Yeah, so all right.
That's not a reach.
That's not a reach at all for you.
Nope.
And, I have a third on him, but a lot of the value has seen him go early to mid-fourth, but knowing that you don't have the fourth, you just go ahead and grab him there in the third.
Yeah.
I think you do. Him
and Rick. With Kentucky linebackers because he loved Jamin Davis.
I love Jamin Davis, yes. I do. But like I said, Ricky Pearsall would be fun to have in this offense, I think. Dak would love to throw the ball to him, I think.
Yeah.
I agree.
All righty. That's enough for Twitter on the 20. Great questions. Phenomenal questions. All right, when we come back, we've got some over-under. We've got some odds on where certain draft picks could go in the NFL draft. We'll see if our analysts think it's right or wrong when we come back with more of the Draft Show presented by Miller Lite.
Hi, Drew Pearson, former Dallas Cowboy and now Pro Football Hall of Famer here. If you're struggling with your vision and tired of those contacts and glasses, don't throw a Hail Mary. Go where I went. Laser Care Eye Center, the official LASIK partner of the Dallas Cowboys.
Drew, thank you so much for trusting us with your vision correction procedure. At Laser Care Eye Center, we offer 6 different vision correction procedures to help patients see.
Check them out at dfweyes.com. Tell them Drew sent you. Hood, hood.
In a stressful world, Lincoln provides balance and calm amidst the chaos by creating sanctuaries that move you through the world with ease. Our vehicles make your time richer and more uplifting with human-centric design, intelligent technology, and powerful performance. As the official luxury vehicle of the Dallas Cowboys, driving a Lincoln is just another way to show your team pride. Experience our full lineup of luxury vehicles, including the Corsair, Aviator, Navigator, and Nautilus. At Lincoln.com.
I'm Dak Prescott, quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys.
And they snap it to Prescott, who looks right. It's not there. He escapes left. He'll run for a first down.
Just like football, when it comes to crypto, it's important to have a team you can trust. With Blockchain.com, I know I'm in good hands. Since 2011, they've been trusted by millions around the world to buy, sell, and trade cryptocurrency.
Prescott's going to run this himself. Run it up the middle, and he scores.
Whether you're new to crypto or an active trader, they've got you covered. What are you waiting for? Get started at blockchain.com.
Hi, I'm Danny McCray, Dallas Cowboys alumni player here with Smoothie King. And Smoothie King wants to ask you, what's that sound? That's the sound of us magically transforming our smoothie bowls into 2 new decadent flavors. Dig into a cool acai or pitaya bowl, handcrafted with crunchy, purely Elizabeth granola, fresh strawberries, and finished with a velvety chocolate hazelnut drizzle. Perfect for breakfast, lunch, or anytime you want to munch. And that's the sound of you making them disappear. Smoothie bowls, now in 2 new decadent flavors. Only at Smoothie King, the official smoothie of the Dallas Cowboys.
This is the DallasCowboys.com Draft Show.
Back here on the Draft Show, presented by Miller Lite. Taste you can depend on. This segment is brought to you by your Texas Ford dealers. Ford is the best in Texas. Back with Aisha Morrison, Brian Broaddus, Nick Harris, Bobby Belt, Jasmine Marshall in the back. I'm Kyle Yeomans. Quick shout out to Colonel Cowboy. He stopped by. He's a big fan of the show. Wrote us a note and gave us these Allied Joint Force Command coins. How cool are these? Yeah. From Naples, Italy. Very cool. He gave us a note. He said, "We love your show. Thanks for investigating and educating and making the postseason more the offseason more interesting for the Dallas Cowboys. Go Cowboys," is what he said. So very cool. Appreciate you very much, Colonel, and thank you for your service as well. As we continue on here on the Draft Show, have some over-unders. Nick, you sent this in our group message, And it's super interesting just to see the way that the country thinks these guys are going to fall. And I want to see if we agree or disagree with some of these names. I'll start with J.J. McCarthy from Michigan, quarterback. Over, under, 5.5. Mm-hmm. What do you think on that one, Nick Harris? We'll let you start since you sent it.
Yeah, so these odds are coming from Circa Sports. It was just kind of something that was thrown in one of my many NFL draft group chats yesterday, and it kicked up a lot of draft conversation, so I figured we'd throw around 5 here. J.J. McCarthy, over, under, 5.5. I don't know who it's going to be. I think it could be literally anybody. You could tell me you could tell me any team that trades up into the top 5.
The Dallas
Cowboys.
Go
grab J.J. McCarthy.
So 31 teams.
Yeah, 31 teams to go up and grab J.J. McCarthy, and I think it happens. I think it's a matter of who, not a matter of when. I'm taking under on J.J. McCarthy.
Ooh.
Which is wild because, going into the draft process, we were like, is he a second round guy? And now he's a top 5 guy. Hammer across the board. So.
I still think he's a second round guy.
I think so too.
I think over.
It's circumstantial.
You think he goes over? I don't think he goes over. I think he goes under. I think a team is going to get aggressive and go up and grab him.
I hate that for them. He may turn out. He may turn out, but I'm not a J.J. McCarthy guy.
Such gentle shade.
I like McCarthy. I don't have him in the first round, but I do like J.J. McCarthy. I think when you talk about, he wasn't asked to do a lot of it, but I think when you talk about NFL throws, you talk about the stuff that you're supposed to throw along the route tree and stuff in the middle of the field and everything like that. I think you see a lot of them on his tape. Mm-hmm. More consistently to me than, Jaden Daniels, Brian. I see it more consistent than over there. I'm trying to draw him off sides today. No, under, because I don't think any 4 or 5 is where I think he's going.
Yeah.
I don't see him getting past 5.
Okay.
You've got all those teams right there, right?
Commanders, Patriots.
Are you guys thinking of trade in there somewhere? Arizona Chargers.
Minnesota goes up to 5.
Think that's where it's going to happen?
Does Minnesota jump up? Does Vegas jump up? Do the Giants jump up? They've been talking to McCarthy quite a bit. There's a lot of conversation to be had there.
Out of Arizona and the Chargers, who would you think would trade? Most likely to trade?
Chargers.
Ooh, I was thinking Arizona.
I was thinking the Chargers because they can slide back 6 spots and still get their guy.
Arizona's been vocal about the fact that they... Mm-hmm.
Arizona was super aggressive last year. We're dealing with Houston.
Yeah.
I think their GM is kind of a wheeler dealer guy. Mm-hmm. If the pick's going to move, I think the 4th pick's going to move.
I think so too.
Move off Marvin Harrison Jr. Would you move off Marvin Harrison Jr. for? No,
yeah,
I'm not saying a quarterback. Just to have a team have their quarterback of the future.
Because I need weapons. But I'll tell you what, you guys convinced me this draft's pretty deep in wide receivers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is.
Now maybe Marvin Harrison is a generational talent. I do have my LSU guy ahead of him, but I think there are a number of wide receivers you could pick up, man. You give me a lot of picks in this draft, I think I could do okay. Arizona, I think, is the team that's probably going to move, if I had to guess.
All right, next one.
So that would make him an under then,
that
right?
That would be under, yeah.
Make an under.
5 would still be under as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Xavier Worthy, Texas wide receiver, over under of 28.5. Aisha, you had the reaction there. You think he goes over or under?
I think he goes under. Unfortunately, this is just the nature of the beast when guys can run really fast at the combine. It grabs people's attention. Speed prevails. I mean, it shows up on his tape as well, but I mean, he's my 4th receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think, Brian?
Man, that's a hard one for me, but because you're going under on that one?
Yeah, I mean, am I understanding this conceptually? I don't do.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I'm gonna go over on that. I'm gonna go over. I mean, I just think there's other wide receivers. Mm-hmm. The speed is great. The size isn't.
Yeah.
No.
And that's the mm-hmm. deal. When we start to I know personally, give me guys like, Corley. Mm. I mean, give me the route runners, the guys that get open. I know that Worthy, I mean, he's blazer, but he is so slightly built. I have him as my 51st best player, so I'm going over. I'm going over on that.
I think he might end up in that 30 to 32 range. That's probably where I go over, but I would not be surprised if he's taken under. Would not at all.
Yeah.
People gamble on rare speed, so I would understand if somebody did, but there's too many good receivers, I think, over 28.5.
I misspoke. He's like, yeah. Thanks for reminding us.
I don't even remember anybody putting John Ross in the top 10 the day of the draft when he went there.
No. Yeah, he's like my 10th guy. The guy could fly, right?
Yeah.
Small guy.
His foot wasn't broken, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody's foot was broken?
John Ross
was always hurt.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
The things I didn't know before I started doing this stuff. What?
What about Olu Fashanu? Bobby, I'll start with you on this one. 14.5. Do you think over or under?
I know there's a lot of buzz about him. I still think under. Like, I mean, you're just the traits are incredible. And I think that it's very easy to project him out as like a future stud left tackle. And mm-hmm. it's very rare that you let somebody like that slide down, you know, into the teens. And so to me, I'm saying under.
I think I'm with you. I think these tackles fly off the board early, and we're not even talking about him mid-round. I think he's off the board before pick 15, so that would be under for me too.
Under.
I'm going over. I'm going over here. It's not an indictment on Fashanu. I think these corners are going to come off the board a little bit quicker.
Wow.
Yeah,
I think
I think these corners, I think someone's going to get aggressive and trade up and go grab a corner, and that's going to start the run on corners.
Hmm.
And I think I have him at 16 in my mock. I think that's probably where he ends up.
But there's a million zillion of them.
Why? Yeah. Wait.
At corner.
Corners?
Corner. Yeah. And I mean, and honestly, too, if you're getting into like some of the fifth, sixth round guys, like, there's some Absolutely. Some guys in there. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that you, I feel you on the fact that people might go because it, but that position in particular this year is so deep. Like, you can find so many good things in some of these later round players as well. So I wonder if teams hold off a little bit more. But all right. I feel you.
Brian, what about this one? Peyton Wilson, linebacker from NC State. I'm going to put you on the spot here. I know you like him. Over or under 41.5?
That's probably going to be right where he gets selected. The medical stuff, I've got him as, I think, my 24th best player on my board when I did my stack. Let's see where I got my
– Do you put your medicals into that?
Yeah, there's some thoughts because Latu, I'm starting to hear some not great things about that one too.
Oh, barnacles.
So, you know, you get all these guys like Latu at 21 for me, Peyton Wilson, 24 – yeah, these are guys that probably, I mean, they're both probably going to go later than that, but you got to give these guys their due. You really, really got to, you know, give them their due there. So I'm going to say that's probably where he's going to be picked. I'm going to say it's probably going to be over that, though. Mm. That would be my guess.
Okay. What do you think?
Over 41.
With Peyton Wilson?
Yeah.
I would go over.
Same thing?
Yeah.
Just think he slides
I would
a little.
Go over just because of the... It's hard to justify because of the tape.
Yeah.
I think this guy's going to tear up some war rooms. I think there's going to be some serious conversations had because I understand, like,
fights started.
It's just hard to justify, like, besides, unless it's an Edrin Cooper, it's just hard to make sense of it mentally when you know what the tape is despite the medicals. But we've seen it plenty of times that guys fall. So I do think he is going to fall.
I saw this guy before. This is Luke Kuechly to me. I know that says a lot. This guy's got that kind of nose for the football, the awareness, where to be, how to tackle, how to finish, the toughness and all that, all the things he plays through. It's freaking Luke Kuechly is who this guy is. It's a shame that he is so banged up that he's going to get pushed down the board because of it. Some teams will have him completely off the board because he doesn't have body parts.
Right.
You know? So get ready for that.
It reminds me a little bit of, you remember N'Kobe Dean 2 years ago, 22 draft.
Yeah.
N'Kobe Dean was the top linebacker on the board for
the height was a problem for N'Kobe Dean. That was the problem for a lot of folks.
But his medicals weren't public either.
No, that's true.
And it comes through, he falls out of the first round, and everybody's thinking he's probably a top 15 player. Mm. Why is he not on the board why is he on the board in the second round? Falls to the fourth round, I believe, and it's just because the linebacker is so physically demanding. The position as a whole is so physically demanding.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have these medicals and you have these red flags, it does present pause. So I think I'm with you guys. I think I'm going to go over with Peyton Wilson.
Err on the side of over when it's medical flags.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm with you guys.
Yeah, him and Latu both.
Medical flags.
And it might even be with the center from Oregon, too. Three of those guys. All of them are excellent football players.
What was his on here, Nick? What was JPJ's?
I'll find it while y'all are talking.
Oh, I've got it right here. 30.5.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, that is fascinating. I mean, there are so many times we see guys fall during that weekend, and you send a text and go like, why is this guy falling? It's like medical.
It's always
like, well, we
medical.
Even knew, like, maybe we even knew something, but like, we had no idea. It was teams just, they don't play with an investment like that when you're talking about it. So I would err on the side of over.
Yeah. One last one before we say goodbye. Xavier Leggett, wide receiver, South Carolina. Over under a 44.5, Bobby. What do you think? Big play receiver, 44?
Yeah, I don't know. That feels really high to me, actually.
Wow.
So, I would say definitely over to me. Especially like when we're talking about how deep the receiver draft is, and you start looking at the, like, Brian's line always about ice cream flavors. Mm-hmm. Like, you're to say him getting picked that early, you're banking on, like, you know, teams not having wild taste in some other receiver. And when they have that, I mean, we've clearly got, like, the top three that just about everybody seems to have in place. But behind that, I don't know how similar anybody's 4 through 15 of rankings are going to look.
Give me Pearsall over him. Pearsall.
I don't hate that take. I don't have that on my board, but I hate that take.
But I got a lot of respect for Leggett, though.
Absolutely.
I think he's a tough,
absolutely,
real tough guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's definitely ice cream flavors. He's a deep play threat. He's great catch radius. Yeah. That's what you go and get with him. I'll say over, just because I think wide receivers, I think it's going to stretch a little bit. I think it's going to stretch.
What is he? He's receiver 16 for me.
He's 15 for me.
Wow. What is he for me? Just a second.
Player 66 for me.
Player 66.
Yeah, I think he goes over. I think he goes comfortably over. I think Malachi Corley comes off the board before Leggett.
Yep. He's wide receiver 10 for me. Malachi Corley goes before Leggett.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
I would take a bet on that. I would make a bet on that.
Let's figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
Let's shake and figure it out later.
A bet to be named later. Yeah. I would take a bet on that. I don't think that's happening. All right.
Nick's got a babysit for you.
I
would do that anyway.
I know you would. I know you did. Speaking of, this is my last draft show of the year,
Thank
guys.
You for all you did.
It's been so much fun, and it does. It breaks my heart. It makes me almost emotional thinking about not being here on draft day and draft weekend, because it is – my favorite weekend of the entire NFL calendar. I love the draft. That's what helped get me into this spot, was loving the NFL draft and always keeping up with it. And it's always a highlight of my year to be able to watch these guys and study and investigate and educate with Aisha, with Brian, with Nick this year for the first time. You're going to continue to kill it. Bobby as well, getting to know you guys. And then Zach Wolchuk is going to take you home the rest of the way. So he's going to cover starting Thursday, next Tuesday, and then all draft weekend on 105.3 The Fan and DallasCowboys.com. So really excited about it. I will be there for Football 101 Thursday, so I did commit to that, but I want to get you guys rolling in the right direction with Mr. Wolchuk and Wooly Bully the rest of the way.
Thank you for all you did, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So the baby's coming home today, so big excitement. Yay. Really excited about that, and should be a crazy couple of months for me. But I'll see you guys down the road, and we'll be back next year, my will, for the draft. But that does it for us here on this Tuesday. When these people return, 1 week away, on Thursday,
yeah.
7 days until the NFL draft. For Jasmine Marshall and Paul in the back, for Bobby Belt, Nick Harris, Brian Broaddus, Aisha Morrison, I'm Kyle Yeoman saying so long from the draft show. We'll see you on Thursday.
This has been a production of DallasCowboys.com and the Dallas Cowboys Football Club. How about this, Cowboys?